tariff collection is vulnerable to corruption because it's not really easy to verify if the declared value of imports on which the tariffs are levied mm-hmm. is correct. Inspectors can double or triple their annual salary just by looking the other way.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. This week's research takes us to Madagascar, where the taxes and duties collected by customs are half of the government's total tax revenue. And to Amasina, the main port, each customs inspector collects $17 million of tax revenue every year. So, of course, the potential cost of corruption is huge. Ana Fernandez and Bob Rikers of the World Bank are two of a team that developed a new methodology to help detect and cut out that corruption, and they both join me now. Welcome to Vox Dev Talks, Ana.
Hi, Tim. Thanks a lot for hosting us.
And hello, Bob.
Hi, Tim.
Ana, first of all, why are customs duties such a huge component of government revenues?
In Madagascar, who happens to be one of the poorest countries in the world, and in many other low-income countries, there are serious challenges in mobilizing tax revenue. Because of the economic structure, a lot of activity is informal and very difficult to tax, and there's limited state capacity. Because of these challenges, collecting taxes at the border as the imported goods come through the port seems like an attractive way to obtain revenue. And as you said in your introduction, in Madagascar, these taxes collected at the border account for about half of government tax revenue. And this is high, but not atypical for low-income countries. The average is around 37%. And in contrast, in high-income countries, customs revenue accounts for a much smaller share, about 13% of tax revenue. But one important thing to note is that although this is being used in Madagascar as the main source of tax revenue, import tariffs are very far from optimal policy instruments to raise tax revenues. They cause a lot of distortions, and there could be a Trade 101 class to discuss that.
But no tax collection is ever entirely straightforward, is it? How does this work?
These tariff duties are collected in the process of customs clearance. So as the goods arrive to the port and as they are subject to documentary or physical inspection by customs inspectors. So I think one thing that may be useful for our listeners is to hear very briefly how the customs clearance process works in Madagascar. Yeah. So it has several steps. And the first step is really the electronic registration of an import declaration in an IT system of customs. This is done by the customs broker in Madagascar, acting on behalf of an importing firm. There's a second step, which is a risk analysis, which will determine how much risk of tax evasion there is in a declaration, and so what type of inspection should it go through. The third, and actually crucial for our research, step is the assignment by the IT system of an inspector to handle an import declaration. And finally, the last steps are once the inspector gets the declaration, he assesses it, he takes into account the documentation that was submitted, the risk analysis, the results from inspections, and then there is the final clearance after taxes and duties are paid.
Now, I'm getting the clue from your description here, but tell me, how is this process vulnerable to corruption?
Tariff collection is vulnerable to corruption because it's not really easy to verify if the declared value of imports on which the tariffs are levied is correct. And so there are essentially two players that are directly involved in this customs clearance process. One is, as I mentioned in the previous response, the broker who submits the import declaration on behalf of the importing firm, and he may cheat on the import value as a way to pay lower tariffs. Mm-hmm. And second, there's the inspector who is assigned to handle that declaration and must check if these values and the taxes to be paid are adequate. And the big problem is that inspectors can double or triple their annual salary just by looking the other way on these declarations. Just to give you some sense of the numbers we're talking about here. So the inspector average salary is about £10,000 per year. Mm-hmm. And it's already very high for Madagascar standards.
Yes, yes, I was thinking.
Yet, inspectors can be greedy because the tax liability on any single declaration can be as high as £150,000. And so these opportunities make it really difficult to detect corruption. Also because in this environment in Madagascar, customs sanctions for improper conduct were basically not applied. And additionally, there's a third player that comes into the process, which is the IT staff that handles the IT system. And IT staff can also play a role in matching certain brokers with certain inspectors. So really the opportunities for side deals between all these players so that imports remain undervalued and tariffs are lower than they should be are really immense.
Now, as economists, you can understand the incentives to be corrupt, but were there strong suspicions in Madagascar before you got involved that corruption was going on in the port here?
Yes, absolutely. So first, of course, this is not a Madagascar problem. The corruption in customs is a global problem.
I can imagine.
But in Madagascar in particular, there were strong suspicions. And in fact, when we joined the project, the top officials in the customs administration asked us to help them improve customs performance and deal with corruption. We also did something interesting at the beginning of this project, which was a survey of all customs inspectors in Madagascar. Mm-hmm. And that survey revealed that inspectors really didn't believe that their colleagues acted with integrity. Less than a fourth of them thought their colleagues acted with integrity, and only 6% of them believed that non-ethical behavior was being sanctioned. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that is useful to know is that in Tuamasina Port, which is the focus of our work, the conditions are really very conducive to systemic corruption because it is a small environment. There are few players. There's in every semester about 16 inspectors and only 46 brokers. These players interact repeatedly. There are high stakes with the large tax revenue to be collected, and improper conduct is really not punished. But what was possibly more surprising to us, more unknown, was how systematic and how sophisticated this corruption was. In fact, mostly because of how many accomplices there were throughout the customs administration.
I love the idea that all the inspectors in the port think that their colleagues are corrupt, but having established with a high degree of certainty that there is some corruption to investigate, you got access to government data that helped you do the analysis on this. What data did you get? How detailed was it?
This data access that we were given was really, really unprecedented. And we really are extremely grateful to the Madagascar Customs Administration, as well as a third-party services provider called Gazinet. They really provided this highly disaggregated data on all import transactions entering the country over a five-year period. And this data included crucial information on who was the inspector handling the declaration, who was the broker that submitted it, who was the importing firm, the risk score, the types of fraud that were detected, the modifications done to values and taxes by the inspector during the clearance process. And the fact that we got this unprecedented access to the data also shows that really the top of the administration was very serious about improving performance.
So can you explain to me the process that you used with this data to try and identify how the corruption was happening?
Yes. So first, it's useful to know what were the official rules. Mm-hmm. So in Madagascar, as well as in many other countries around the globe, I think more than 100, as we identified, the IT systems in customs prescribe something called random assignment of import declarations to inspectors conditional on their productivity. In fact, this is done as a way to deter corruption. So to explain this in other words, when an import declaration comes in, it should be assigned by the system to the least busy inspector who is in the port and is active, basically is working on that day. Mm-hmm. Because we had this very disaggregated and detailed data, we developed this approach that identified potential manipulation of this inspector assignment by evaluating whether certain inspectors were paired excessively frequently with certain brokers. And with this excess interaction being something that would deviate from what would be predicted by the conditional random assignment.
So from that, what can you conclude about the impact on inspections and the impact on revenue as well?
Well, first of all, we find that almost 10% of declarations are handled by inspectors whom we suspect to be excessively paired with the brokers that register these declarations.
Yeah.
And then secondly, what we see is when declarations are routed to these inspectors that have excess interaction with the brokers that handle them, we see that the characteristics of these declarations suggest an elevated risk of tariff evasion. So these are declarations that are subject to higher taxes. They're also simply bigger shipments, but the prices that brokers declare are much lower than the prices other Madagascar importers record for the same product.
Mm-hmm.
And third, we find that inspectors treat these declarations preferentially relative to how they handle other declarations that they're expected to clear. So they clear them significantly faster. They're much less likely to insist on penalties on changing the value of these declarations upwards, and they're much less likely to record fraud. So the end result is much less tax revenue collected on these declarations. And what's more is that we find that sort of this preferential treatment is particularly pronounced for high tax declarations for which there's a lot of revenue at stake. So all of this sort of points to reduced revenue losses. And when we calculate sort of how costly this preferential treatment is, we find that any given declaration for which we identify excess interaction, the revenue collected is about 26% lower than it would have been had this declaration sort of been randomly assigned. And that's about $2,600 per declaration. If we look at total cost of corruption, the aggregate revenue cost, we find that overall revenues collected in Toamasina port could have been 3% higher in the absence of this scheme, this specific corruption scheme, but not sort of weeding out or eliminating other types of corruption. I think what's also interesting is that because we have such detailed data, we can pinpoint exactly sort of who's likely to participate in this scheme. And so as Anna already pointed out, sort of we find accomplices across the administration, but the tax revenue losses are really, really concentrated. So the top two most corrupt inspectors in each semester account for more than half of all the revenue losses. So even though gains are widespread, ultimately, it seems to be like a few inspectors and a few firms that are really benefiting from this scheme. What's interesting, I think, from an enforcement side is that if you look at naive performance metrics, if you sort of were to try to rank these inspectors of sort of who's doing a good job and who's not doing a good job, then sort of naive metrics such as sort of the amount of tax collected per inspector or the number of times they find fraud, if you use these metrics, you might be tempted to conclude that the most corrupt inspectors are actually doing the best job. And the reason is simple. Because of this manipulation of the IT system, they're able to attract the most lucrative, the most risky declarations, where sort of the potential for corruption is the highest, but you know, where also sometimes they impose penalties. And so very perversely, if you weren't considering this assignment and you weren't looking at what type of declarations they're actually clearing, you would actually celebrate their performance and conclude they're doing better than other inspectors. And I think that also helps explain why this corruption was difficult to detect and why it persisted for such a long period of time.
But, Bob, this is some very powerful forensic analysis that you have done here, but you don't have the smoking gun. You haven't observed a bribe being paid. How confident can you be that this is organized corruption?
That's absolutely right. It's true that we do not observe direct bribe payments. We can, of course, calculate sort of the tax losses associated with the scheme relatively accurately. But precisely because we don't observe bribes directly, we took a huge number of additional steps. So, you know, it's not just enough to document that certain inspectors are paired with certain firms excessively frequently. We also showed, secondly, that when this happens, their declarations have an elevated risk of tax evasion. And third, that they treat these declarations very differently from the way they trade other declarations. But I think what's perhaps more telling is that after we sort of communicated our findings to the top of the Customs Administration and said, we think these patterns are potentially suspicious, they took rather drastic action and they divested the assignment of declarations to a third party. And then this excess interaction disappeared temporarily. They also launched a number of audits. And in fact, when we first communicated these findings, they said, aha, We're not surprised to see certain individuals appearing on your list because we already had our own suspicions. They launched their own audits, did their own investigations, and eventually sanctioned a number of inspectors for corruption, either by moving them to different jobs or encouraging them to retire voluntarily.
It doesn't always go down well when you inform an organization that people have been stealing from it for a long time. It's good that they reacted like that for the historical corruption. Did they take any other action?
Yes, absolutely. So these findings, I think, took place in the context of a broader set of reforms supported by the World Bank that the Madagascar Customs Authority undertook to improve its performance, both in terms of revenue mobilization and trade facilitation, so they reduced clearance times. So as I mentioned, sort of they divested this assignment of declarations to inspectors to a third party, Gazinet. And I think what's interesting is that this was extremely successful. So we saw excess interaction disappear and revenues go up. But then after a period of about 4 months, excess interaction started to reappear. And the reason was that the officials in the IT department that sort of had been implicated in orchestrating this corruption in the past, they found a new way of of gaming the system. So they started withholding declarations from this third-party provider, Gazinet, and then allocating these declarations that they withheld themselves. But thankfully, Gazinet staff were very vigilant, and because all declarations eventually have to leave the port, they're able to see that their list was incomplete. And so that helped the Madagascar Customs Administration eventually weed out this type of corruption. But I think what's interesting is that the incentives for corruption are so strong that even if you make it much harder for people to game the system in one way, they will inevitably try to game it in a different way.
This is not just a problem that we encounter in Madagascar. It's common probably to every country in the world in some extent. So if other countries have similar problems to this, could they use the same analysis, the same methodology as you use to identify and root out that corruption?
Absolutely. In principle, if you get access to these data, it's extremely easy to replicate our approach. Also, all the codes are available online. So this really shouldn't take very long. But getting that data access, I think, requires a significant amount of trust. And it requires officials that have the courage to stand up against corruption and take action. So in that sense, we were quite fortunate in Madagascar. It's impossible to completely eliminate corruption, but you can strive sort of to get rid of its sort of worst manifestations. And this approach can definitely help, but it's only one of many approaches. And I think the general recommendation we have is sort of to monitor, to be vigilant, and to be open-minded.
The idea occurred to me that, as you say, it's risky and it's very hard work to go down the route that you did. So would it just be enough to use this third-party assignment mechanism and just monitor that was working fairly well? Would that not be enough to root out corruption?
I think that would be helpful, but probably not enough. So I think there's this tendency that people in the development community have is to believe that technology can solve all problems.
Yes.
And indeed, it is true that random assignment is a very, very effective anti-corruption device. It's widely practiced across the world, not just in customs. We also see it, for instance, in the assignment of court cases to judges. But I think what's key is that our results show that this type of IT system is not a panacea because itself is susceptible to corruption. So when the IT system itself is corrupt, clearly, it's not necessarily going to help you. I think the bigger lesson is that you just have to be very vigilant, as crackdowns on one specific type of corruption are likely to engender novel manifestations of the same underlying problem in a different guise, unless you are able to change the underlying incentives. In Madagascar, I think the reason this project was successful was in large part because it had political backing from the Minister of Finance and from the very top of the administration. And the people that we supported, they themselves took quite significant risk, both professionally and personally. Enabling those type of reformers, I think, is also a very important task for the international community interested in improving revenue mobilization in low-income countries.
This is a fascinating insight into the very real impact you made on a very high-stakes problem. So I hope some people are listening and thinking, maybe we can implement that as well. Thank you very much for talking about it, Anna.
Thank you very much, Tim.
And thanks, Bob, as well.
Thank you very much, Tim.
The The paper is called Corruption in Customs, and the authors are Cyril Chalandar, Ana Margarita Fernandez, Gael Rabayong, and Bob Rikers. It is at the World Bank Policy Research Working Paper 9802, if you want to find it that way. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. Now, the best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe. Go on, do it now. Remember as well that if you want to listen to any back episodes of Vox Talks, you will always find them, along with articles about the papers we feature, at voxdev.org.